Coming up today at 1 on Hometown Heroes, we hear from two P-51 pilots, one black and one white, and learn about another Mustang pilot who never got to come home from World War II.
He was bright and brilliant and a good pilot, and he knew he was going to die, refused not to go, and went and was killed.
Join us for an emotional journey with two decorated veterans and find out which cause has brought them together 70 years later. That's today at 1 on News Talk 580 and FM 105.9, brought to you by Humana, proud to honor our hometown heroes.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the show where each time we take a trip back in time and listen to stories from our greatest generation. If you've heard the show before, you know what it's all about. We want to honor our veterans for their service and for the sacrifices they've made. We want their stories to be preserved and not forgotten so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we certainly hope to be educated, maybe even inspired by how much these veterans love our country. And we're going to hear from two very special veterans today. But before we talk to them, we're going to talk to someone who's very involved in a cause that I think mirrors the mission of this program. It's called the Spirit of 45. And if you're a longtime listener to Hometown Heroes, maybe you remember some of the beginning stages. Let's welcome in Linda Laurie from San Diego, California. She's the National Events Coordinator for the Spirit of 45. And Linda, I'm sure there's some people out there saying, Spirit of 45, what are you talking about? Is that a record? Is that a gun? Spirit of 45, what are you talking about? And I'm sure you get asked that a lot, don't you?
Yes, I do.
So what's your best answer to that common question you receive?
Well, my best answer is that we have a campaign called Keep the Spirit of 45 Alive, and it is comprised of hundreds of partners across the country who share a passion to keep the stories, the memories, the photos of our World War II veterans and the people who served on the home front, even the kids, alive, to keep those memories alive. It all started in 2010 when a bill passed through Congress and the Senate saying that there is now a National Day of Remembrance for the World War II generation. And in honor of the 65th anniversary, there were hundreds of events that took place across the country. And once that happened, we realized, you know, we need to keep this spirit alive so that before they all leave us, we get as many of their memories and photos, and we have established this Day of Remembrance so that future generations will know about the World War II generation and will help to keep their spirit alive.
Well, it's so wonderful, and I know that the folks who listen to this program are certainly behind you 100% and probably want to know what they can do to help, and maybe there's some of those who made calls to their congressman back in 2010 when you were getting this started. But give us a sense. I know you're working toward August this year, and that will be the 69th anniversary, and there will be a lot of events there, but I get the sense there's a real big buildup toward the 70th anniversary. Is that going to be a pretty big deal in 2015?
It's going to be amazing. Just amazing. We just came off of a conference this last weekend where partners came from around the country. Some of them braved amazing weather to make it to San Diego so that they could plan events that will happen across the nation that embrace the efforts of all of the service branches and also all the tremendous service that happened on the home front, which includes the women and the kids. But the story is getting even better than that. There were 15 countries liberated at that time, and we're beginning to get calls from other countries now who may turn this into a true international story. So it's getting very exciting.
So if someone's hearing about this for the first time and wants to find a way to get involved, what's the best way that someone can do that?
Well, they can certainly go to our website, www.spiritof45.org, and get some information about what's going on and where some of the partners are so that they could reach out and get connected. I would say that would be the first thing that they could do.
Well, I think that's a good place to start. And I know you live this 24/7, 365, and you've met a lot of interesting people. And maybe some of the listeners might recognize the names of people that have been willing to go to bat for keeping this spirit of 45 alive. And I guess most recently at this conference, you had a young lady who's not as young as she used to be, but is still recognizable from the TV show The Waltons. Michael Learned is on board in this?
Yes, she is. She's wonderful. She has a great heart for her father and his service in World War II and how she was too young to realize at the time how he had contributed, but now she can so fully appreciate what he had done. And she also carries a large heart for communicating to the kids that what she calls the new cool should be doing the right thing as opposed to getting away with doing the wrong thing. And so she really lends her voice to that effort, and we love her for that.
Well, and I guess that kind of underscores what I sense is the overriding mission of what you're doing. And if you have a different take, feel free to share it because you're the one in the trenches. But my impression has always been that this campaign to keep the spirit of 45 alive, to remember our greatest generation, is more than just to look to the past. It's really looking to the future and hoping to inspire our latest generation. Do I have that right?
That's exactly right. Some of the kids today, you know, have only known a world where we were at war because we've been at war for so long. And some of the kids coming out of college are lacking hope. And if they can hear some of the stories of people who lived during a time that was way more difficult than what we have today, and they can see that they came together, they worked as a community, they were united, they didn't fight with each other, they helped each other. If they can be inspired by them, then maybe they'll be inspired to try their way of correcting problems and working to make the world a better place. It makes me very nervous when I hear young kids say, I don't know World War II. I don't have that game. Because they don't realize it was real and that America was different and the people were different. And if we handle it properly, the latest generation can be our next greatest generation. And that's what we're hoping for. It really is all about the kids.
And I caught a little bit of that. I mean, I was not able to be there for all your festivities. I was there for just a portion, and I certainly got a taste of how special this project is and how the veterans that you have involved are really passionate about it. But I know that kind of the capping event of your weekend was a public event in San Diego by the statue of course, the famous Kiss in Times Square that happened in August of 45 at the end of the war when people all over the country and the world were celebrating. And it sounded like there were a fair amount of young people there who were getting a real taste of what this is all about.
There were. We invited kids who come from low-income areas, who don't get a chance to get involved in things like this. We had very young Sea Cadets who did their very first color guard. We had Girl Scouts who've been with us for many years. But we're always looking to increase the number of children who get involved and who learn because we know, we've seen that kids who've stayed with the program for 3-4 years end up in good colleges. Their parents tell me it's affected them in such amazing ways. They get along better with their siblings. They're more respectful. They consider their choices, you know, and it has really changed them. So we have seen that it means a lot to the kids when they get involved with the Spirit of 45. So we always look in everything we do, in all the partners in everything we do, we look to include the kids.
Well, I think that's wonderful. And, you know, one thing that I'm wondering, and I'm going to ask you in a moment about the two veterans that our audience is going to hear from today, Bob Friend and Jerry Yellen, two tremendous gentlemen who I really enjoyed talking to, and I think our listeners will enjoy hearing from as well. But I don't know that I've ever asked you, Linda, what it was that got you involved. What grabbed you about this idea of keeping the spirit of 45 alive?
You know, sometimes you find a passion and sometimes a passion finds you. And I had the immense blessing of spending 2 years traveling and growing very close to Edith Shane, who was the nurse in the Kiss picture. And she shared stories with me about what it was like back then. She was an accidental celebrity, you know, being photographed in Times Square. But she traveled around and spoke to the children and talked to them about what it was like for them to get through the hard times. And, you know, now it was their turn. And she really inspired me so much, you know, to help to continue to spread her word. I think her life was even shortened. She had cancer that she didn't talk about, but she gave the last 2 years of her life to making sure that the kids knew about what they did. And I'm, even today, sometimes I think of her, I want to call her, and I share her heart in wanting to make sure that kids realize how important this message is and how it can impact their lives in such a positive way.
Amen. Well said and well done. And I know that the two gentlemen we're going to hear from today have made an impression on you, too. What do you appreciate about these gentlemen? One, a Tuskegee Airman who was flying P-51s with the red tail on it, and another, a young man with a real powerful story himself of flying P-51s in the Pacific. Bob Friend and Jerry Yellen, what have they meant to you in the spirit of 45? Because we're going to hear from them in a moment, but maybe you can help set the stage for them.
Both of them are tireless workers in traveling around, giving speeches about what they did so people hear the real stories. They want people to remember an America that they knew back then. They're the real deal. They were there. To have them out in the front lines, following in the footsteps of other spokesmen that we've had, like Ernest Borgnine and Jerry Coleman of the Padres and our Edith Shane, they just keep this line of spokespeople going who are inspiring the kids the best they can with, you know, all of the passion that they have within them, and that just means the world to all of us.
I know when you have a conference like you just did, it's mostly to get fired up and encouraged and prepared for all the hard work ahead as you try to, you know, educate people all over the country and involve people in this growing campaign. But was there one thing that you experienced over the weekend that left you the most encouraged or inspired, or was the most meaningful to you?
The most meaningful part of the conference was that somehow we managed to get 80 of the most extraordinary leaders together in one room at one time. They were all so excited. They were already making plans, long-term plans, in the short time that they were together. And to watch, just sit back and watch all of that happen, knowing that if anybody in the world could make these things happen, it was the group of people that was in that room. They're already well underway with all of their plans. And the heart and the passion of these people just left me speechless. It's just tremendous. And I know that we're just starting. And by the time we get to 2015, I think we will be making quite a large noise, quite a huge celebration, both solemn and celebratory, across our country and maybe even reaching into several more countries. And to know that these people were the ones that could do it.
Super. Well, last thing for you, Linda. I appreciate your time and appreciate everything that you're doing. I know so many in our audience certainly identify with it and are probably getting excited hearing about these ongoing efforts. When you look forward to August of this year and, of course, that 70th anniversary of the end of World War II in 2015, is there something that you need? Because I know this has grown through grassroots, and it's grown and grown and grown, and you're very pleased with that, but I know you have a vision for it to continue to grow. So is there something that you need that people could really be helpful in if they had the time and energy and desire to get involved?
You know, there is. If people go on to the website, spiritof45.org, and they go to the section that talks about proclamations, they can see some sample proclamations for Spirit of 45 Day. And if they were to copy one of the examples and take it to their local mayor and say, I would like you to do a proclamation in time for the 69th and certainly the 70th anniversary of the end of World War II. I believe that once that proclamation is made, they could go forward and talk to groups of any kind, Rotary, American Legion, and a lot of the groups that they'll find mentioned on the website. Then something can happen in their community, because once the elected officials know about it, more people start to gather around it because it's official, it's intimate, it's personal to their communities. And that's one of the most important things that people could do. So I'd say really go, you know, make an effort to go out there and engage your local elected officials in making something happening in your own community.
Well, I guarantee you, Linda, there are a lot of people that just heard you say that and are going to that website right now to download that and get busy on it. Because I know our audience, and we have some patriotic people who love America and who love our greatest generation. Linda, thank you so much for everything that you're doing. Please keep us posted if there's anything that Hometown Heroes can do to help. That's what we're here for. Is there anything else that you think we need to know?
I think that's all I have to say right now about what we're doing, but I would like to say that I know that a lot of your listeners are veterans, and I'd like to say thank you to all of them, particularly your World War II veterans. This day is for you. We're honoring you. We never want your efforts to be forgotten. We want you to know that we want your stories to be handed down for generations to come. And I just want to say thank you and God bless you.
Well said. That is Linda Laurie from the National Keep the Spirit of 45 Alive campaign. You heard that website, www.spiritof45.org. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll hear from those veterans that we discussed briefly. One, an African-American pilot with the Tuskegee Airmen during World War II. Another who was one plane shot down away from being named an ace. That was not what he was after, and he has a very powerful story that he'll share when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
One of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that their real sincerity and a genuine spirit are things that really make an impression on me. And that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years. I've heard them say it's all about serving their members, and then I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, EECU demonstrates over and over again what 200,000 members already know. EECU takes you personally. Go to myeecu.org to find out for yourself, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.
They say a picture is worth a thousand words, but when it comes to making my mouth water, I don't need a thousand words, just two of them. Mongolian beef. Okay, two more. Ming's Restaurant. And I guess if you want to know where to find it, I should give you two more. Las Banas. That's where I grew up. And I'm guessing Las Banas is somewhere you pass through every now and then. And if you drop in for the Mongolian beef, you might start calling it what I have for years. My favorite place to eat. Period. He may not look old enough for this to be true, but the owner, Paul Cito, has been working his magic in the kitchen there for 45 years now. It's all delicious. If you're a garlic fan, try the Baja shrimp and thank me later. But the Mongolian beef is absolutely unmatched. The flavor, incredible. The texture, tremendous. I can't do it justice with words. You just got to go taste it. One word of caution, do not go on Monday because Ming's is closed on Mondays. So pick another day, tell them I sent you, and let me know if your taste buds enjoy it as much as mine do. That's Ming's Restaurant, 435 West Pacheco Boulevard in lovely Las Banas, California.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, shining a spotlight today on the campaign to keep the spirit of 45 alive. You can go to spiritof45.org to learn more about that nationwide effort. One of the veterans who I got to meet in San Diego was Lieutenant Colonel Bob Friend, 93 years young now. He flew 142 missions with the 332nd Fighter Group during World War II. He flew P-51s occasionally against ground targets, but mostly as escort for American bombers fending off attacks from German fighter planes. Maybe you recognize the 332nd as the group made up of African-American pilots who had trained in Tuskegee, Alabama, the Tuskegee Airmen. Bob was combat operations officer for the group, working under then-Colonel Benjamin O. Davis, who would eventually become the Air Force's first African-American general. The recent George Lucas movie Red Tails brought another round of attention to the Tuskegee Airmen. And at age 93, Lieutenant Colonel Bob Friend uses his time to draw attention to causes he believes are important. I caught up with him on the historic 116-year-old steam ferry, the Berkeley, in San Diego Harbor, as part of that Spirit of 45 convention. Well, first of all, before I take you back in time, why don't you tell me why you think it's so important to be involved with this Spirit of 45 campaign?
I think that, once again, the country is beginning to face a situation where we need to be concerned about the impact that involvement in these foreign affairs have really and truthfully caused a lot of problems mentally and socially and in some instances physically.
So you think by talking about the end of World War II and some great times in American history, we can change the future of American history? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying change history. I'm saying make history.
Well, you know something about making history. Tell me about the first time you got up in an airplane. Where was that? What was that like for you?
Well, I was in the CPT program in 1939-40. That was really and truthfully the very first time that I had been up in an airplane. All the traveling that I'd done up to that point was on train or by automobile. But when the country realized that Europe was doing something more than just giving training to people for as potential pilots, and they thought, these guys, not far from, you know, a lot of trouble. There was, remember, the Italians flew a whole armada of airplanes over. That had two messages. Number one, it was great technology. But number two was they let us know they could fly from there to here. They could easily have had bombs on board.
I'm sure the recent years have been exciting for you to see all the Tuskegee Airmen get the Congressional Gold Medal and then have the movie come out. I know you had a lot of fun with Red Tails. What has that meant to you to see the contributions that you and your fellow pilots, who had to overcome a lot, to see those recognized now?
Well, you said me and former pilots. Actually, you have to realize that it takes about 11, 12 people to get an airplane into the air.
A lot more than just pilots.
Not more than just pilots. Yep. These other people are very important. Every time I took off, I had the warm feeling that it was prepared as best I could possibly be prepared for the mission by the efforts of all of these other people. I was a quarterback.
Did you ever play quarterback on the football field?
I did that.
Where was that?
I did that at college. And baseball, I played with some of the black teams around New York before they really and truthfully started to expand the operation.
Did you play with some of those famous names from the Negro Leagues?
Well, I know that the New York Cubans were the team that I was associated with the most.
Well, I'm a baseball guy. I'd love to sit here for a while and talk to you about Minnie Minoso or Louis Tiant Sr. or Orlando Cepeda's dad and those other Negro League stars on the Cubans, the New York Cubans. And for that matter, I'd love to hear about your accomplishments in the space program, but I know that our time's limited here, so let's talk World War II. 142 missions, is that right?
Yes, 142 missions in the 15th Air Force. I flew some sorties in the 12th Air Force when we were flying a completely different aircraft for a completely different mission.
Help me understand what it was like to be you at that time, because my understanding is your whole role in your squadron was one of someone who was somewhat expendable. You guys are there to protect these bombers. It means, well, if someone's going to go down, it's going to be you guys, I suppose. Did you feel like the first line of defense?
Well, we were that. There's no doubt about that. And certainly the objective was to allow that bomber to do its mission. And certainly, yes, we were the buffer. But strangely enough, they didn't concentrate on us nearly as much as they did on trying to get the bombers down. So it was fairly easy, as a rule, to chase them off. Don't get me wrong, they would get through sometime because they'd get above and start a dive and just dive straight through. It's almost like suicide. You're going to get caught and picked up after, not before he gets there. But they, too, had an objective, and that was protect their homeland.
And they had a variety of different planes. At the end of the war, they had planes that were faster and superior to even the one you were flying. Did you ever engage any of those ME-262s?
Yes, I met a 262, and strangely, I met him head-on. And I didn't realize we were going head-on. I thought first that I was overtaking him. Silhouette looked the same. But then when I saw the guns firing, I knew that we were coming toward each other. And we went right past. When I turned around, he was gone.
That's one of those you don't even figure out what it was till it's gone, huh?
Well, dogfights are funny. It can be going on, you know, rather heavily, and then all of a sudden there's nothing. Everybody's gone. Some people took off for home, others, and it was important for us not to go chasing after them, because if you did, you left the bombers open to secondary attacks.
I thought that was a dynamic that was well depicted in the George Lucas film Red Tails. That aspect of, hey, you got to stick to the plan, not be going for the glory and chasing down a fighter. Was that ever a temptation of yours to go after one of those German planes?
Well, you know, it's like once you get locked on to him, you know, you don't want to let go. But we had some well-grounded discipline, and that was don't be drawn off.
Where did that come from?
The commander. Colonel Davis was a man that had a tough job. What he had to do was to take people who were relatively raw. All of us, how far much more experience could you say one had? You know, guy graduated in first class, guy graduated a month later in second class. And he, from these people, had to take people for, or identify people for key positions. Squadron commanders, group operations officers, squadron operations officers, maintenance officers, you know. And he had to get the right guy. Best of all, he recognized when he had made a mistake with a guy, and he made the change right away. He did not mess around.
That's leadership for you. With all those missions, I'm sure you had plenty of close calls. But is there one for you that when you think back on, you feel like, you know, God was really looking out for me on that one?
Yes. We had some of those. I had a barge explode, and I flew through all that debris. Got through okay. And the ones that, not direct, but it happens. When on one mission, the fellow that was going to lead the mission said, "Who's flying Charlie today?" Charlie was the last position in the squadron.
Tail end Charlie.
So I said, "I'm flying Charlie." So he said, "Well, let's switch airplanes. Mine's a newer airplane, and Charlie has a lot more activity, you know, staying in formation and so forth. So you take that and I'll fly yours." He never came back. Airplane quit on him.
So that would have been you in the airplane that quit.
Yes. And other instances when attacking a ground target, you can see the rounds coming. And actually, you can do things about it. If it looks like it's going to hit you, you're okay, because it goes like this. But if it looks like it's going by in front, be careful. You better change something, change speed, change direction, change something, because it was pretty much hanging on to you then.
I'm sure you found plenty of bullet holes in your planes, but with stuff like that, with that anti-aircraft fire coming at you, what's the closest it actually came to hitting you? You personally, I mean your body, not your plane.
I never came close to being hit. I know that there were friends who had rounds go through the cockpit. You know, one guy, the first aid kit was behind your back. Took the first aid kit out. Another one, the round died just as it got there, and it stayed stuck in his windshield. Yeah.
Close enough.
Yes.
How much did you enjoy the plane you were flying? For people that haven't experienced that airplane, what was it like for you?
That airplane, the P-51, absolutely so far ahead of its time. It really can be said that it swung the war. It swung the things in our direction without question. And as far as the pilots feel, I didn't feel like I climbed into an airplane. I felt like I put it on. I wore it.
And the look on your face says you wouldn't mind wearing it again, that you would go out there right now if there was one out here on the tarmac.
I certainly would love to. Yeah, I know that people think I'm a little too old for that, but I don't think you ever forget some things, and that's one of them. They've let me fly the airplane sometime after we got up, and I fly it okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do you think it's important to tell the story of the Tuskegee Airmen? What's the value of that for us today in knowing what you guys did and what you went through?
Well, I think the most important aspects of it is not to let it happen again. The reason we don't need it again. I think that all you have to do is look at the relationship to the people at events like this. Much different, much different. Some people, these people that you would probably never have had words for. What do you say? I know that the country itself has just absorbed so much in the way of the business in race relations. I feel that we should not even bother with considerations about race. I'm not saying that people should be not like their heritage. I like mine. I'm proud of my heritage. You know? But I don't think that it should be something that we say African-American, Indian-American, Mexican-American, Latin-American, German-American, Canadian-American. Who needs that? You're an American or no, you're not.
Well, I know you are. And I get the sense that you're not one who wants to dwell in the past and bring up all those old stories. But can you give us an example of discrimination that you felt throughout this process of becoming a fighter pilot? Was there a moment where you felt like you were treated poorly or differently because of your ancestry?
I can't think of that, but I know of some instances that took place where it's just almost impossible to believe that such thing could happen. I know we had one of the instructors in an accident that required blood transfusion, and the only person on the base that had his type blood was a black nurse. She volunteered to give it. His wife said she'd rather he be dead because she didn't want any black children.
Well, what you guys did helped some people learn that that was a misguided belief, and a lot of people learned that.
Well, I was just going to say, for whatever reason, you know, that we people of color, people of other things, you know, have to get out there and demonstrate for you on an individual basis, not on a group consideration. I don't care whether the guys are Jewish. I went to synagogue for 2 years and myself. Doesn't really and truthfully make a bit of difference. I think you just know that the individual up there, and you have to have the confidence in it. You know, that was really and truthfully the reason I think a lot of the airlines didn't hire blacks to start with, because they thought the people would be afraid to fly with them. Not that they thought the guy couldn't do the job. It's just that they knew the people would perceive them as something less than the best.
Well, you've helped change that. And I want to thank you, first of all, for serving our country. And thank you for sharing a little bit of this with us. Is there something, when people ask you what you're proud of with your record of service to our country and all the things that you've done since the war, what are you most proud of?
I think I'm most proud of the fact that I can stand up to almost any question, whatever what it is. You know, I think that all too often, you know, people used to say, sun could be shining. And the white guy said, looks like rain. Black guy would say, sure does. No opinion. Uh-huh. Right?
But that's not how you operate.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Not that way.
Nope. And we're thankful for that. Lieutenant Colonel Bob Friend, 93 years old, of Irvine, California. We heard about 15 minutes of his story, but we could take hours and still not cover everything he did in a 30-year Air Force career. Maybe we'll hear more from him down the road. He's a pretty busy guy. He even has a Facebook page if you want to keep up with him and his travels, see photos of his different stops that he makes, you know, going around spreading the word about causes close to his heart, like keeping the spirit of 45 alive. In a moment, we'll meet another P-51 pilot who had a very special way of celebrating his 90th birthday. Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. If you are a World War II veteran and you have not been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., Honor Flight wants to take you there, free of charge. The sooner you submit an application, the sooner Honor Flight can get you to your memorial. In Kern County or the Central Coast, call Lily Marsh at 661-544-VETS. That's 661-544-VETS. Or go to honorflightkerncounty.org. For Fresno, Madera, Merced, Mariposa, Kings, or Tulare counties, check out CV Honor Flight, CV as in Central Valley, cvhonorflight.org, or call Al Perry at 559-970-9853. That's 559-970-9853. Maybe you're the son or daughter of a veteran and you'd like to go along as a guardian. There are applications for that too, and there are other ways you can help. Donations to Honor Flight are tax deductible. We all owe our freedom and liberty to the men and women who put their lives on the line for it. Let's all come together now behind Honor Flight and give our veterans one more tour with honor.
A high school where 98% of graduating seniors go to college, where success on the SAT and advanced placement or AP classes outpaces almost every other school in the Valley. Home to a student newspaper that hauls in national awards on an annual basis. Its sports teams capture section championships. Have you figured it out yet? The school is Fresno Christian, and it's not just a high school. Fresno Christian offers a complete K-12 curriculum delivered by supremely qualified, experienced teachers who connect with their students personally, intellectually, and spiritually. Go to FresnoChristian.com to learn more about the value of a truly Christ-centered education. And if you want to see for yourself, call 299-1695 to schedule a campus visit. Whether it's kindergarten, high school, or anywhere in between, you'll get a genuine feel for what Fresno Christian's commitment to excellence could mean for your student. That number again, 559-299-1695. Fresno Christian Schools, education with a higher purpose.
This is Hometown Heroes, honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. We've heard from one P-51 pilot, Lieutenant Colonel Bob Friend of the famed Tuskegee Airmen. Now we turn our attention to Jerry Yellen, who at the recent Spirit of 45 convention celebrated his 90th birthday aboard a historic ship in San Diego Harbor with the singing of Happy Birthday led by Bob Hope's granddaughter. Yellen was a P-51 pilot in the Pacific at the end of World War II, and he's a tremendous storyteller. He's the author of 4 books, and I think you'll find he tells a pretty captivating story with a microphone in front of him as well. Well, I'm sure you grew up always believing you'd celebrate your 90th birthday on a ship in San Diego with your uniform on and the DFC on your lapel and all these people here, right?
Oh, yeah, that was always my dream. I didn't think I'd make it past 20 during World War II.
Given where you are, I don't blame you.
Well, we were on Iwo Jima. It was pretty tough duty. We got there on March 7th, 1945, to strafe for the Marines. After they took the first airfield, we flew down from Saipan, and it was tough duty. There's 8 square miles of land, 90,000 soldiers fighting, 23,000 Japanese, 67,000 Marines. 28,000 were killed, nearly 7,000 Marines, and 22,000 Japanese. And 21,000 Marines were injured out of the 67,000. And there were more medals of honors won by the Marines on that battle than were won by all the Marines in every battle other than that in World War II. It was awesome.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have had the chance to do what you did from there without the work that they did. I want to get into your story from World War II, but real quickly, tell me why you are so passionate about this Spirit of 45 campaign. What are you hoping to accomplish?
The education of our children has to be changed. There has to be another greatest generation. I'm telling you my heart now. When I was growing up, the golden rule was do not do unto others what you would not have them do to you. And today the golden rule is those who have the gold rule. And we are not a nation of doers anymore. We're followers, we're not leaders. There must be 1 million jobs available for scientists and mathematicians and physicists in America today, and the educational system isn't providing them. They have to come from India, Taiwan, and Japan, Korea, to fill the jobs that we have. So my wish for the Spirit of 45 is to reach out to all the young people in America to make our stories known of what made us the greatest generation. We served 16 million of us served, 10% of the population. But the other 90% were at war also. We had an identifiable enemy. Japan was our enemy. Germany declared war on America. We never declared war on Germany, but that made the war, Germany and Japan. And after it was over, the leaders of America rebuilt Japan and rebuilt Germany so that we have allies of those who were formerly enemy. In 1988, my youngest son, a 4 son, married the daughter of a kamikaze pilot in Japan. And I have 3 Japanese grandchildren. They mean as much to me as my 3 American grandchildren.
Well, you got to give me the story, because I heard you when they were singing happy birthday to you and cutting your cake about when your son had proposed to his wife and she had to talk to her father, because her father was a Japanese fighter pilot in World War II, right?
Yes, he was a kamikaze pilot. He had 4 or 5 hours in a zero, and his whole class of classmates were sent into the war as kamikaze pilots, but he and one other guy were sent to China, and he survived the war. In 1983, I was asked by the Mitsui Bank Group to go to Japan, talk about real estate in America. I was a consultant to the major banks in San Diego and San Francisco. And I didn't want to go in 1983. Japan was not a place I visit, and Japanese weren't human beings. They weren't people. But my wife wanted to go, so we went to Japan. And I immediately fell in love with the culture, the food, the people. So when we came back in 1983, we offered a homestay program to our youngest son, who was a senior in college. He graduated from college in 1984, didn't know what he wanted to do, so he took a job teaching English for 1 year. Now it's 2014, and he hasn't come back yet. In 1987, we went to Japan, and I met a young lady, and Robert said that he wanted to get married to her. And I saw the faces of the 16 guys that were killed that I knew in my squadron. And I wondered what they would think, but it was not my life. It was his life that was important. And I asked him, what does her father say? And he said, he won't meet me. And 7 months later, the father did meet my son. And he had full beard, bushy hair. And the father asked him just 5 questions. How old is your father? 63. Was he in the war? Yes. What did he do? He was a pilot. What did he fly? He said P-51s. He said, where? Over Japan. And he went home, said to his wife, make the wedding. And she said, why? We hate them. And he said, any man that could fly a P-51 against the Japanese and live must be a brave man. And I want the blood of that man to flow through the veins of our grandchildren. So I have 3 grandchildren in Japan. And we went there in September of 2012 to talk to them as adults. My oldest grandson's name is Kentaro. We call him Ken. And he has a job. He just graduated from the Hokkaido University, which is the technical school similar to MIT, as a physicist with a master's degree in physics, and was one of 20,000 applicants for 100 jobs. And he got one of the 100 jobs. His brother last year graduated from the University of City of London, a 4-year course in 3 years, as a philosopher, and the last 2 years of the school, he studied in Latin, which was the language spoken by the ancient philosophers. And when he graduated on the dean's list, got an A+ on his dissertation, and was awarded a 2-year master's program scholarship at Oxford. So he just started Oxford University. So I guess that other guy, the other father, knew something that I didn't know, and it happens to be right. It turned out he was right. And then I have a 17-year-old granddaughter. We don't know what she's going to do, but the 2 boys are absolutely outstanding.
But neither one of them would be here if both their grandfathers hadn't survived World War II.
That's true. That's true. It's an incredible life. I met here in San Diego at the Spirit of 45-day celebration. It'll be 1 year tomorrow. It was on a Sunday. Hope, whose grandfather was Bob Hope, who was the hero of every GI in World War II and beyond. And she came here tonight to sing happy birthday to me. And she's become a friend in 1 year. And look at her. Look at that face. So, yeah, I'm delighted. This has been quite a night.
Yeah, Miranda Hope, Bob's granddaughter, singing happy birthday. That was a big highlight. I can tell she's a pretty big fan of yours too, Jerry. And there were some other people here who hold special meaning for you because of a World War II connection.
I met, for the first time, a member of Phil Schlomberg's family. Phil Schlomberg was my wingman, who was killed on August 14th, 1945, on the last mission flown over World War II.
And you guys were P-51s, and he was a good friend of yours and was flying on your wing, but he had somewhat of a premonition about that mission, didn't he?
Phil Schlomberg, we were briefing on August 13th, and somebody asked, why are we going there? They dropped 2 bombs, the war's over. And Jim Tapp, who passed away January 30th, was our then CO. And he said, we have to keep him honest. And Schlomberg leaned over and he said, Captain, if we go, I'm not coming back. And I looked at him and said, what are you talking about? He says, it's a feeling I have. So I told Tapp that story. And he said, the only person to get him off is Doc Lewis, if Schlomberg agrees to go see him. And he didn't want to see him. He says, I'll go. On the morning of the 14th, I said, just stick on my wing. They're going to broadcast the code word Ohio before we ever get to the target. Nobody heard the code word. We got to where we have to drop our exterior tanks. We dropped the tanks. We went in and strafed airfields around Tokyo. We were getting shot at. I know you could see the tracers. But when somebody had only 90 gallons of gas left, we needed 90 gallons to get back to Iwo Jima. They called in 90 gallons. And I'm leading a flight of four, and I'm leading my flight of four through some clouds towards the B-29 that's going to navigate us back to Iwo Jima. When I came out of the clouds, Schlumberger was gone. There was no radio contact, no visible contact. And he was the last guy killed in World War II. While we were strafing Japan, they declared the war over. And it was 3 hours before we got back. So he was really the last man killed on a mission of hostility towards the Japanese on August 14th, 1945.
And you met members of his family for the first time here tonight?
I met the children of this lady, but this lady's father was Phil Schlumberger's brother. So she heard from her father every day after the war about what a young man he was. He graduated, Phil Schlumberger graduated from university at the age of 16 and entered the Air Corps at the age on his 18th, and he took the IQ test, and his IQ test score was the highest ever scored of any of the 16 million of us that entered World War II. He was bright and brilliant and a good pilot, and he knew he was going to die, refused not to go, and went and was killed.
And you talk about the 16 million. He's one of the more than 405,000 who didn't come home, and it sounds like there are lots of days where you've thought about that and thought about the fortune you had in being able to come home and here celebrating your 90th birthday.
It's been a wonderful life. I met and married a young woman on October 22nd, 1945. We met on a blind date. We were married 64 years this past October. She's not here, unfortunately, tonight. We moved into an assisted living facility in December. She's frail and she has dementia and she's sort of losing it. But we'll stay together until it's all over for one of us. And that's the commitment that our generation had about most everything. We made a commitment, we stuck to that commitment, and we have to do it again. And the young people of this country don't know about that, and they should know. So that's the spirit of 45, to educate the young people through the Air Force Association Cyber Patriot Program, through reaching out to school children and taking them to the battlefields, letting them look up one of the 405,000, picking a name, and then investigating who that guy was, what he was like, what school did he go, and then saying a eulogy for him, or writing a eulogy, or making a videotape. We have to educate the young people about commitment and about following through.
Very well said, sir. I haven't read any of your books. I know you've been pretty prolific in writing them, but I see the Distinguished Flying Cross on your uniform. Is this the original uniform that you fit into here, or you borrow this one?
The original uniform, it is exact copy. It's not a copy. It's the original manufacturer. When I came home from Japan in October of 1945, I gave everything that I owned about the war to the neighborhood kids. I kept nothing. I didn't want to be reminded of where I was and what I had done. But now, this is the original uniform, and I'm proud to wear it. I'm proud to be an American, and I just hope that we can live in harmony with all the rest of the people in the world. We're at the point in life where we have the weapons that can destroy everybody, but really, the iPhone is what's going to destroy the people. The iPhone and the internet, and you don't have to go to war anybody to shut down the economy of any country that you want anywhere. And we need young, intelligent, well-educated science, mathematicians, physicists, and those in order to prevent anybody from shutting us down.
You know, I saw that DFC and was going to ask you about how you earned it.
Well, I think I earned it just for showing up and doing the things you were told to do. There were some missions. You did a little more than something else. I shot down four Japanese airplanes, and I guess they gave it to me because that's what they did. Same thing with the Air Medal. You flew a certain amount of missions, you got the Air Medal, which I got with three or four clusters. But it was important, I guess, to recognize what we did. And I wasn't alone. I was just one of 16 million people that served this country. And that was 10% of the population. And the other 90% served as well. Rosie the Riveters, the people gave up rationing, all everything. We were at war because we had an enemy. We've been at war now for 23 cumulative years in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we still don't know who the enemy is and who the friend is. And we have to stop that. We have to stop war.
Well, you mentioned there that you shot down four enemy airplanes. Five would have made you an ace. Were there some unconfirmed that you wish would have been confirmed, or is that something that doesn't matter to you?
It never mattered to me. Having a title never mattered to me. I never thought about it. I didn't know a thing about aces until after the war. Didn't know about that.
The Schlomberg story obviously hits home for you, how close you came, how it could have been you, but is there a moment in combat where you really thought, this is it for me?
You know, I never thought I was going to die, and I think that that gave me the freedom to fly as a free spirit. And I just hoped that I would never lead my squadron or whoever was flying with me into a place that he couldn't get out. I had three wingmen killed. Phil was the last one. The first one was a guy from New Jersey, and he was following me down eight ships. I was a leader, and he was behind me, strafing Chichi Jima, and Dick Schroeppel was hit, bailed out, got into a life raft, and was killed by mortar fire. And then on May 30th, I shot down an airplane. My wingman was Danny Mathis. I had a toothache. I was supposed to lead a flight to Osaka on June 1. He took my place in my airplane. And an hour out of Tokyo, an hour out of Iwo Jima, they were led into a storm. And on June 1, 27 fighter planes went down in a mid-air collision. And two guys from the 78th, my squadron, Danny Mathis and Jack Nilsson, were killed. 23 other guys were killed. Two guys parachuted and lived. And General Hap Arnold came all the way from Washington to investigate it. 27 fighter planes going down due to weather was a huge, huge loss, huge. And I knew I was going to live. And after the war, I didn't know why I lived. And I know why I'm alive now. I have a mission. And I have a purity purpose. That mission is to do the things with the young people before I leave.
Well, thank you for doing that. And thank you for serving. Is there anything else that you want people to know?
No, I just like them to have a happy life, have a purity purpose for their life, similar to what I have. And I'm going to keep coming until my time runs out. And if I keep busy, I'll never miss it.
Sounds like a plan. That is Jerry Yellen, 90 years old. Just a portion of his story. He's written a couple of books, one called Of War and Weddings, A Legacy of Two Fathers, published in English and Japanese. I bet you can guess what that's about. More recently, he wrote The Blackened Canteen, and he has a couple more, too. They're all available on Amazon.com, or you can visit his website, jerryyellen.com. I have a few photos up on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. That interview was recorded on Jerry's 90th birthday. Pretty impressive gentleman, huh? We meet a lot of them here on Hometown Heroes, don't we? And one thing that I've made certain to do since starting this program all those years ago is to make sure each veteran receives, free of charge, as many copies as he'd like of the program so his family can have it to hold on to. Many have wanted to pay over the years, and my response is probably the same as yours would be. I say you paid for a lot more than a few CDs through your service in World War II. It's the least that we can do, and I know you feel the same way I do. EECU feels that way too, and EECU's sponsorship of Hometown Heroes allows me to keep producing and providing those copies of the program to all the veterans. So thanks, EECU, and thank you for listening today. Join us again next time on Hometown Heroes when we try to remind you again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.